B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes, twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bates. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town fame. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Final hour, Gasper Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub. I am here in Gross Dorchester, the Town Fair Tire Studio. Chris out in Milwaukee. He was covering last night's Game 6 between the Celtics and Bucks for the Globe. Just a quick respite from the Celtics and Bruins ahead of their respective Game 7s. But we'll take your calls on 617-779-0985. There was a ton of other stuff that went on this week, especially when it pertains to the Patriots, the NFL. Tom Brady apparently getting this Fox gig. We'll get your thoughts on that. But just quickly, Chris, I'm sure you've had a chance to peruse the Patriots schedule as that was released officially Thursday night, 8 p.m. Five primetime games. Five feels like a lot, but I guess that shows that the league still believes in the Belichick aura, the upside of Mac Jones. They were a playoff team last year. They only had three primetime games last year, but five.
You're looking forward to those post-game shows?
Oh, yeah, no, Chris, especially that run where it's four straight in a row. Like, look, staring down the barrel of four straight weeks of getting in at 3:30 in the morning. Oh, no, that's a pisser right there. I can't wait. I tweeted it. I was like, because someone was like, holy crap, do you see this? I said, yeah, pray for me, Joe Murray, and Jeremy Conley, producer of the Patriots postgame. And Jeremy, I believe, said, it's 6 months away and I already want to kill myself.
Oh, you're going to be real ornery on the heart and soul of Felger and Maz is going to be real ornery on some of those shows the next day.
Yeah, well, thankfully, one of them is Thanksgiving night, so I don't have to worry about the next day. Excuse me. But opening on the road, two straight, for the first time since 2014 in sultry Miami to open up September 11th, and at Pittsburgh. You have any thoughts just looking at the schedule? Do you think it's a tough one? Because I do think it evens out in the middle there when they have, Jets, road Jets, home Colts, bye, then Jets again. There is a stretch where they could maybe make some hay like they did last year. But I think the beginning and the end of it are pretty tough.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they can get to a point where they get to that bye week and are feeling pretty good about themselves, right? Because after the bye week, you have what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 games. So your bye basically comes right in the middle. So you could be at a point, I would not be surprised if you were at a point there where, you were whatever the record is, 6-2 or 6-3, whatever. And then it could be sort of a repeat of last down the stretch because those games are going to be really challenging games, starting with that game on Thanksgiving Day in Minnesota. It just gets, I think, really challenging from there. Arizona, that's a game on the road. Las Vegas, I don't know how good they're going to be, but playoff team last year with a coach that knows you really well. I sort of feel like the Cincinnati game against the defending AFC champion Bengals, when the schedule came out, flew under the radar. Nobody's really, it's not a primetime game, but no one's really talking about it. But that's a big game to have. And then you wrap up the season with two divisional games against the two teams in the division you're probably going to be competing with. So it's a difficult, I could see them last year, obviously they get to 9-4 and then including the playoffs lose four of their last five and struggle there down the stretch. I could sort of see a similar thing where you get off to a hot start here and then you're just trying to make it to the finish line. You are staggering, sputtering to the finish line as you get into the playoffs, if they're even able to make the playoffs.
Now, do you personally look at any stretch there with any personal dread that you are like, oh God, they're going to make me go cover this one?
Yeah, I know. I know on Thanksgiving, I have a pretty good feeling, the childless person that I am, that I will be in Minnesota on Thanksgiving. I have a pretty good feeling that I'm going to have to do that game. Maybe I'll get bailed out, but I have a pretty good feeling I'll have to do that one. My goal when the schedule comes out, and this is getting harder and harder because Buffalo is a good team, is to avoid Buffalo. I don't want to make that trip, but that's a challenge. It's the last game of the year, and it could mean something. So I might have to go to that one. But overall, I kind of like the schedule. You know, I'm a Pittsburgh fan in terms of that city. I like that city.
Underrated. Great road trip. I did it, what is it, 2016? It's a beautiful city aesthetically. It's walkable. It's an easy flight. I'm with you on that. Like, everyone's all horned up about the Vegas trip, and I get it because you get to cram in a lot of party and gamble and everything else, and then you get to go to a football game. Pittsburgh's underrated for a road trip.
Yeah, and the weather should be good that time of year, so I'm excited for that. The games I'm excited for, I want to go to, just based on travel destinations. Pittsburgh, Green Bay, if you haven't been to Lambeau, it's great. I feel like a lot of Patriots fans are going to try and go out there. I like Cleveland. I think Cleveland's underrated. I'm actually hoping Deshaun Watson's playing by then, just from a pure sports standpoint. I know Patriots fans are hoping that he's not. That one's interesting. And then Vegas. I've never been to that stadium. It's the only stadium in the league I haven't been to, so I'm excited about that one. I'm excited about the Vegas game, going out there potentially for that. But it's not like a dreadful schedule, I think, either for the Patriots or, you know, for us from a work standpoint, other than some of those night games. I will say, just going back to 2007 when I covered that team, and I know if someone had a nickel for every time I said, just going back to 2007, I covered that team. Be some wealthy people out there. You guys wouldn't have to invest in this crypto crash. But those night games take it out of you. It took it out of that team at the end of the year. People don't realize with the travel too, and I know they're going to stay out there, Arizona, Vegas.
Yeah.
But those night games, it throws your whole schedule off in terms of NFL players or creatures of habit. And when you play that many night games towards the end, especially towards the season, which is already long, and you have bumps and bruises, and you don't have as much recovery time, and there's some short weeks in here as well with some of these games, that hurts you. And so that concerns me for the Patriots down the stretch. When you're talking about Arizona on a Monday night, even though you're staying out there, it's Vegas on a Sunday night, and then it's a short week for them basically to come back and have to play a 1 o'clock game against the Bengals on the 24th. It's already around Christmas and all that other stuff. These guys are human beings too. So that worries me a little bit as well.
All right. The other thing I wanted to touch on, and you weren't aware of this because we were texting back and forth about some of the stuff I wanted to talk about today, and you're covering the Celtics, so I get it. But there was a story from Mike Reese, who, of course, we all know is as plugged into the Patriots as anybody there is.
I think he said this on NFL Live. Did he write it as a story? I saw it in the New York Post as comments he said on NFL Live on ESPN.
Yeah, we'll come back with the sound. And then there was also a tweet from Henry McKenna, who covers the Patriots, saying he's heard the same thing as Mike Reese on the Patriots offensive play calling. And that is this, Chris. The Patriots offensive play caller hasn't been decided yet, and it might come down to a competition. That's the word being used, a competition during training camp between Matt Patricia and Joe Judge. A competition. Your thoughts?
Oh, man. I mean, that's first of all, I don't like the idea. Just take the names out of it, right? I don't have a ton of faith in those two guys as offensive coaches, but just taking the names out of it, with a second-year quarterback in a very important season who needs to grow, I think you need a clear game plan, a clear voice, and you need stability. So just simply from a philosophical standpoint, I don't like that, and I disagree with that. I think you need to go into it, and he needs to know who's the voice that I'm going to have in my headset, who's the voice I'm listening to. Quarterbacks and play callers have to be in the same rhythm. It's a little bit like a battery in baseball, pitcher and catcher. And you can't do that if you don't know who the guy's going to be and you don't have like a rapport from a personality standpoint. But I think that's a horrible idea to begin with, regardless of the names. Now, on top of it, we add the names in there. And oh my God, it's even worse. This is like a choice between, you know, diarrhea and nonstop vomiting. Yeah. That's basically, that's like a competition between diarrhea and nonstop vomiting. You know, there really is no winner here. So I don't have a lot of faith here. I will say that if you remember when Josh McDaniels was going to take that Colts job and then ghosted the Colts, before he ghosted the Colts, the scuttlebutt was that Joe Judge was going to take over. He's going to go from wide receivers coach to offensive coordinator. So Bill Belichick is something in Joe Judge that makes him believe he can be an offensive coach and a play caller. The Patricia thing, I don't get. He's basically like the team's general manager. He's Pink Stripes. He's Ernie Adams. He's like the consigliere for Belichick. Now he's going to be offensive coordinator and offensive line coach. Like, why doesn't Bill just ask the Crafts if Patricia can have an ownership stake too? Like, I don't get it. I mean, how many hats is this guy going to wear?
It makes absolutely no sense. It has reached peak absurdity with this Matt Patricia Joe Judge thing. And it's a competition. Like, it's bad enough to, Chris, like the names, like that these guys are around the team. They're hovering around Bill, that they're doing God knows what. But now it's a competition to see between the two of them who can be the offensive coordinator. And you hit on it. Like, the most important factor of this is Mac Jones in his sophomore year. And when I said this yesterday on Felger and Maz, when continuity and comfort are paramount to the success of a quarterback, and you agree with that, right? Like, I think that that's an important thing. Let alone one who's going into his sophomore year. How does this benefit Mac Jones when you go from a real offensive coordinator with Josh McDaniels, who he had, I think it was clear, just eyeball test alone, they had a rapport. He helped Mac Jones in his rookie year. So you go from McDaniels to two failed head coaches who've never been OCs anywhere in Matt Patricia and Joe Judge. Like, how does this help Mac Jones? It doesn't. There's no way.
Yeah, I don't know. Unless Bill's going to be really involved as well. I mean, maybe it's going to be offensive coordinator by committee. Maybe it'll be a collaborative approach. I would honestly feel better about them giving the play calling to Nick Caley. He's been in the system. He's been around Josh. He's been around Mac Jones. I would feel better about Nick Caley ascending to offensive coordinator with some help and support from these other coaches than I am just throwing one of these guys into this role. And I also look at, did you think that Giants team, and I know Jason Garrett was there as the offensive coordinator, and that was an issue for Joe Judge. You know, he did not like having him there. He was basically a plant of the Mara family. But what do you see from Joe Judge's tenure with the Giants that would lead you to believe he is going to be an innovative, creative, adaptive offensive mind?
Literally nothing, Chris. I don't. He's worked with wide receivers. He's been a special teams coach. Does he, anything you've seen with, you know, because the Giants are still on all the effing time because of the, you know, the regional aspect of it. In watching any of those Joe Judge teams, those years he was there, the few years he was there, did anything like strike you in terms of, like you say, innovative in terms
no.
of the offense? Did it remind you of like the Sean McVays of the world?
No. It didn't even, and by the way, it's Sean McVays of the world. You mentioned that McVay. It's even remind me of something that was quarterback friendly that could like turn a Jared Goff into a Super Bowl quarterback. And when he got fired by the Giants, John Mara said, "We've done everything possible to ruin Daniel Jones. So now you want to take one of the guys involved in that and turn him over and turn Mac Jones over to him? That doesn't seem like a good idea." And then again, you know, Patricia, look, who knows? Maybe Patricia is like a poor man's Andy Reid in waiting. He's going to have his own Cheesecake Factory menu. Maybe these larger guys, they just, you know, they're used to looking at a large sheet of things from which they have to choose. They're just good at it. I don't know. Maybe that's the case. But I don't see that one. I don't. And I know players who played for him and they respect Patricia. They say he's very smart. But some of those guys I've spoken to say he's really intelligent. He knows football, but he's not always the best like teacher. Like he's not always the best at conveying his knowledge in a clear, simple, direct way to players. Is that the guy you want running your offense and dealing with Mac Jones?
No, surely not. In give me about 30 seconds to a minute. What did you make of the Tom Brady monster 10-year, $375 million deal from Fox Sports to become their lead analyst when he retires?
I mean, I feel like he got the contract from Fox he never got from the Patriots, one. number two, I you know me. I'm a fan of all things Tom Brady, but I'm a little fearful this could go Joe Montana. Do you remember how bad Joe Montana was in the studio, but do you remember how bad he was?
Yeah.
I mean, he was so bad. And I heard Felger say this. Oh, you know, no, this will be easy for Brady. Nobody knows more about football, blah, blah. Nobody knew more about football or quarterbacking than Joe Montana. He didn't like it. He didn't put the work in. He didn't want to be critical. And that's what I'm afraid with Brady, that he's not, you know, this is the guy who reads the four agreements is suddenly going to be out there second guessing a head coach on 3rd and 6. I don't think so. So I don't think this is going to end well.
No way. There's no way he makes the 10 years. And, you know, Hardy said he feels like the job is beneath him. I think so, too. It just doesn't. I was shocked. I really was. Like, I was on the golf course at the time, and all of a sudden my phone's blowing up. I'm like, oh, God, what news is this? And I was like, this has to be fake. Like, this is like someone just screwing around on Twitter or something. But no, it just doesn't make any sense in terms of his brand, I guess, and just his personality, like you're saying. Like, he's just too vanilla. Like, yeah, the guy's a savant when it comes to football and reading defenses. Is he going to give you anything? I doubt it.
I mean, I just think he is very exacting and demanding.
And guarded.
But he is guarded. But he's exacting and demanding behind the seat with talk to some of the guys that played for him. I mean, he will bitch you out.
Yeah.
But the public persona is he always wants to keep it positive and he doesn't like negativity. And he kind of lives in this like Steve Jobs, like reality distortion bubble that he's created in his life. So again, are you going to be calling these games and saying, oh man, you know, I know Baker Mayfield's getting a second shot here with the Panthers, but this is why the Browns traded him. You can't miss that throw. Like, he's not going to do it. The best announcers are people who are willing to be critical. The Dennis Eckersleys, the Rodney Harrisons, you know, people who can be critical at times when it's warranted. I just don't know if Tom can do that.
Yeah.
But you know the answer. You and I texted about this. You know why he really took this job.
Oh, yeah. Well, it reminds me, I hate to blow up his spot for the second time this week, of a friend of mine who makes a really nice living, has a real job, but at night he drives Uber. You know why? Because he doesn't want to be home. Just like Brady. I'm sure that's a factor, too. Like, oh, the kids and the family and my wife. Well, the marriage is really going great. Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, we know why. All right. Well, all your calls on the Celtics, Bruins, anything else we've touched on here today, we'll get to your calls coming up, along with five questions for Chris Gasper. We've got nothing to do with sports at the end of the hour here on Gasper and Murray.
Chris Gasper. Big Jim Murray. 98.5. The Sports Hub. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Sports Hub.
This is 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sounds like fact, not opinion to me.
This is Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Do you get a sense of who will be calling plays for Mac Jones this season?
All right, Laura, I'm going to set the stage for you here from New England. They're in the second week of the second phase of the voluntary offseason program. So that means there's individual and group instruction and drills on the field. No media has been present for any of it. Mm. So really, no one has seen anything, Laura. So you have to go by what you're told. And here's something that was relayed to me, that if you are on the field for these sessions and you just closed your eyes and listened, you would know who the leading presence is for the offense among the coaches. The voices of Matt Patricia and Joe Judge standing above everyone else. They are leading this offense. Now, Bill Belichick hasn't said who is going to call the plays, but it will most likely be one of those two. And Laura, I got the number two pencil. I'm going to put it in the ear because I'm told don't be surprised if it's Matt Patricia, who always has that number two pencil in the ear.
Yeah, when it's not, he leaves it in a stick of butter like Homer. You get that.
Another delicious play call.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's right.
Another delicious memo.
Another delicious play call.
Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub. That's ESPN's Mike Reese on NFL Live saying the Patriots offensive play caller hasn't been decided yet. Could come down to a competition during training camp between Matt Patricia and Joe Judge. And Chris, I know you weren't in yesterday for your usual spot on Felger and Maz.
Yeah. By the way, where was Felger broadcasting from? Because if he was doing it from the arena, there was a chance that I could join him down there. But then I heard he didn't do it from the arena.
No, I think he was at a friend's house, and it looked like the conservatory from Clue.
That's what I saw.
Yeah, it was great. For the sewer that is Twitter, every once in a while, some of you guys on there are pretty effing funny, and that was a good one yesterday. Like, people tweeting like, yeah, the wood did Felger in the observatory with a candlestick. Like, there was some good stuff. But I know you weren't in and you missed this, so I had some fun with this repulsive story.
Yes.
In that, if this is what it's going to be, a competition, well, the Patriots really should lean into it. You know, produce something for Patriots.com. Don't just make it a competition. Make it a competition reality show like this.
So you want to be an OC?
The competition show that'll help find the new offensive coordinator of the Patriots. Featuring Matt Patricia.
Matt, how would you beat cover three?
The primary weaknesses on cover three are the seams and the flats.
That's how I attack it.
And Joe Judge.
Joe, what would be your plan to improve the player, the quarterback?
Well, the only way Mac is going to get better is if he gets a union construction job and learns about blue-collar toughness.
Like, that's what you're going to get from those guys.
That was awesome.
And Matt Patricia.
I like the Joe Judge.
Matt Patricia with his delicious play calls covered in barbecue sauce and butter. And Joe Judge just trying to make you blue-collar, like, yeah, you got to get a union construction job, Mac.
Have a dinner, a ham salad sandwich, and Dr. McGillicuddy's. Ugh.
These guys have never been OCs in their lives. Anyway, Charlie at Salisbury, thoughts on the Patriots offense and this ridiculous story. Go ahead, Charlie.
Hey, guys. I enjoy your guys' show.
Hey,
I got a problem. Like, you know, the past 10 years, all we hear about is how complex this offense is. And so the new guys coming in, I think it's a real coaching problem if you don't adapt to the new personnel coming in. And I'm just so sick of hearing, oh, they don't get it, you know, for the first or second year. And I just think there's a real bad coaching problem.
Yeah, Charlie, and it just goes back to, why didn't you really just go hire Bill O'Brien when it felt like that was a possibility? But what, there's some like handshake gentleman's agreement between him and Bill and Nick Saban?
Yeah.
Like, no, I don't want to poach him.
I think O'Brien had made a specific commitment to Nick Saban that he would only leave for like a head coaching job, that he was going to stay X amount of years and only leave for a head coaching job.
Yeah. Ryan on the couch wants to touch on something that I am also looking forward to this sports-filled weekend. Go ahead, Ryan.
Hey, guys. I'm a huge Bruins fan, and as hard as I'm rooting for a Bruins win today, I think I'm rooting harder for Toronto to blow this series.
Oh, Ryan. Them blowing that no tee in Game 6 to the Lightning the other night, I'm like, oh, yes, of course. And now please show me the streets of Toronto where they're all
Maple Leaf Square
and those sad faces. Death, taxes, Maple Leafs fans' pain. Please don't take this one from me. Like, the sports world's been turned upside down when it comes to the sports schadenfreude. The one thing that I do root for outside of, you know, the results and takes that I am rooting for. But it's the pain of others that I really still do love. And some of that's been taken from me. Like Cleveland, they win a championship. The Capitals, you could always count on them blowing it. Mm-hmm. They win a Stanley Cup. F and UGA winning the national championship this year. Like, some things, it's like, oh, God, the world is becoming more, sports world is becoming more unrecognizable by the day. Don't let the Maple Leafs win tonight. And I feel strongly about that, Chris. Like, that, I do still think they're going to find a way to F it up, because that's what the Toronto Maple Leafs do.
I mean, can you imagine the level of pressure on those guys right now? I mean, you said tight booty syndrome before. Your TBS, can you imagine, like, what is the exchange rate in Canada on tight booty syndrome?
I don't know. And it's tough, too, because that Lightning team, like, enough. Like, you know, and I don't want them going on a deep run. Like, that team annoys the hell out of me. But, like, of the two, I'm not going to root for the Maple Leafs tonight. No, I'm rooting for funny. And the funniest thing possible would see that team fail at home again in a big Game 7.
Oh, man. I mean, those people are going to be on pins and needles. It's one of those things. It reminds me, like, when I had an opportunity to go to Game 4 2004 ALCS. My brother had tickets. He had season tickets that year, and he asked me if I wanted to go against the Yankees. And I said no, because I was so beaten down, and I had so much PTSD from what had happened, Red Sox, Yankees. And also, I had been there in 98. When the Yankees had clinched the AL East, I had really good seats behind their dugout. They had clinched and they were like jumping up and down and dogpiling on the mound at Fenway. And it was just, the whole thing disgusted me. And so I was like, I don't want to see this again. So I didn't go. So I wonder how many Maple Leafs fans like that could go to that game are just like, nah, I want to be able to wallow in my possible pain at home. I don't want to be with other people.
Steve and Peabody on the Bruins Game 7 coming up this afternoon in Raleigh against the Hurricanes. Go ahead, Steve.
Good afternoon, men.
Hey, how are
you? Good afternoon.
Good. Excited for tomorrow's Celtic game, naturally.
Yeah, you got to sneak Jim in.
No problem.
Sneak him in one of those side doors.
With the Bruins, I don't know how to feel with this team. I mean, I know they took 3 games at home, and they lost 3 games on the road. I just hope they can do it.
Steve, you've watched a lot of hockey in your years. Do you ever remember anything like this, any series where the teams at home look so dominant and then look like they're tripping all over themselves when they go on the road? Like, I don't think I've never seen home ice matter this much, or teams feel more comfortable at home and play so differently.
I heard earlier in the week people saying 2011 because naturally Vancouver won up there and we won at home. And then, you know, we went up there in game 7 and took it from them. And people said, oh, you can't compare 2011 to, you know, 2022. But, you know, anything is possible. So we shall see today in a couple of hours and tomorrow afternoon.
All right.
And I hope to see you guys.
All right, Steve. Appreciate it. Always good hearing from you. Yeah, so today, the first reading from Ty Anderson here of 98.5 Sports Hub. Always read his stuff at 98.5sportshub.com in case you weren't paying attention. Today, the first road game 7 for the Bruins since the final in Vancouver in 2011. The only game 7 win in franchise history. Again, like that's another one. Like, really? But no, sure enough. So, yeah, it's just weird how good these teams have been at home and how the Bruins have looked so overmatched in these games at PNC. But I don't know. There's part of me that feels like I kind of like them today. Like, this can't continue, can it?
Well, I think there's more pressure on the Hurricanes. I mean, they're obviously the team that was expected to win. They were up 2-0 in the series. They've been up Bruins at home. The Bruins have been a team that's been difficult, I think, for them to beat in the playoffs over the years traditionally. I think there's more pressure on them. And I wonder, is this the game? I thought Swayman, from what I saw, and I went back and watched like the condensed game on NHL.com because I was traveling and didn't have a chance to watch the game live. I thought that Swayman was pretty good in that game. Is there a chance that this is one that Swayman can steal? Is this the game that Swayman steals?
I hope. I mean, I thought of the games that he's played in this series. The last one was the best. You know, that was, so this was also the same talk going into game 5, Chris. Well, all the pressure's on the Hurricanes after the Bruins have crawled back in this series. And can Swayman steal them? Like, I thought Swayman, especially with that first goal, sucked. And the Bruins were overmatched. And outside of the first 5 minutes, were kind of a no-show in that last game down there, too. So, for all that pressure, the Hurricanes were dominant again in that arena. So, I don't know. But I can't see this. It can't possibly continue again this afternoon, can it? I don't know. All right, more of your calls, which will lead into the five-question segment with Gasper coming up next.
That's an aberration, which I freely admit.
It's Gasper and Murray.
I'm drunk, you're gross, let's go.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is Chris Gasper.
I'm not the one who's red-faced and ranting, so who's the baby?
And Big Jim Murray.
Takes in your face, sports.
Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Ah, there we go. All right, Gasper Amari, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Final segment of your calls, which will segue into 5 questions for Chris Gasper. Got nothing to do with sports. Matt in the Walpole on the Celtics last night in their big Game 6 win. Specifically, Marcus Smart. What does he want to talk about there, Matt?
Hey, love you guys and love the show. And, Jim, you're definitely the Marcus Smart of Pelgrim Naz. And you definitely showed a little bit of the Dark Lord there talking about a few minutes ago. I want to talk about the press conference.
Yeah.
Did you guys see Marcus Smart's press conference where he would not name Jason Tatum by name? And whenever anyone tried to give him credit, Jason Tatum credit, they were basically just saying that's why he gets the big bucks. That's why he gets the big bucks. So I think there's definitely a power struggle, and Marcus Smart will not give up the power that he doesn't have.
So
that's
Matt,
interesting.
I didn't. So again, I didn't watch the press conference. We had played that clip earlier where he was calling himself the heart and soul of the team. Did that happen? He wouldn't.
I'll be honest, I'd have to go back and listen to it. It wasn't noticeable to me that he wasn't saying Jason or JT or whatever. I mean, that was the first question that Smart was asked, was about Tatum and the game he had. And he did say that, you know, that's why he gets the big bucks, but it wasn't in like a negative way.
Yeah.
But I never noticed that. I have to go back and listen to it. Sometimes there are subtleties there. I mean, it seems like they're in, you know, everybody's sort of in a good spot. I know those three guys are friendly. they're friendly off the court. Honestly, I think they have better chemistry sometimes on the court, to be honest. But I didn't pick up on that quite the same way in terms of his press conference. If anything, I thought Marcus's press conference was really heartfelt. Just him talking about really his inability to sleep since they lost that game, feeling like he let the team down. He had a really interesting comment because we have talked about how confident he is in himself. As he was sort of hanging his head, and assistant Damon Stoudemire said, "Hey, man, I've never seen you put your head down. You know, don't start doing it now." He said that to Smart, and I guess that resonated with Smart. But I didn't notice that thing with Jason Tatum. Do I think there's a little bit of a, you know, subtle power struggle, though, in terms of who's the leader of the team? I do. Like, when Smart makes comments about – remember when Horford had the big game? He's like, "Al's the best vet we've ever had. Al's the best vet I've ever had."
Oh, yeah.
It's like, what? Like, yeah. So why are you talking like you're LeBron James?
Yeah, that was that. So I found that simultaneously annoying because, again, he's treating himself like he's like the leader of the team. And it's like, dude, you're just doing this because of tenure and everyone blows smoke up your ass from the franchise to the fan base. But also, on the other hand, I also thought he was trying to give, you know, kudos to Al in that. I think that that also harkens back to when Kyrie was here and Al was here. And was, remember, he said, like, you know, "We lack veteran leadership." And
yes.
It's like, dude, Al Horford's right there, yay-hole. What are you talking
about? Yes. Yes. Yeah. No, so I don't know. I think sometimes, you know, look, I can be critical of Smart, and I do think there is an element of him being the longest tenured Celtic. And like you said, they sort of kowtow to him that I think seeps into his head and sometimes seeps into his game and can be problematic. But I do think that, you know, overall, he's in a good position to influence the team positively, and I think he does try and give credit to his teammates, and I don't think he's out to sort of like steal somebody else's shine.
Richard and Brockton on both these game sevens today and tomorrow. Go ahead, Richard.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. First time caller.
Hey, thanks.
I'm a long time Bostonian all my life, and I can't remember a back to back seventh game between the Celtics and the Bruins on a weekend.
It's never happened.
How about some of those?
Yeah, Richard.
I didn't think so, but...
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, it's never happened, because a lot of people were saying the same thing, but yeah, no, it was confirmed from Boston Sports Info, who's always good with stats and history of all Boston sport and things related to Boston sports, and it's never, ever happened, which is crazy to think with all the, you know, crazy
success. It is crazy to think. You're right. But my thing would be, it would be great if some of the Celtic players, and you guys have the way of getting in touch with them, of going to the game tonight to support the Bruins, as well as some of the Bruin players going to the Celtics game tomorrow to support them.
Well, Richard, it's good in theory if both games were being played at the Garden, but I don't know if the Celtics are going to be making a stop in Raleigh,
no,
North Carolina.
I don't think so. I don't think so. Yeah, if they were both being played, you know, there, that's not quite going to work out. But no, it's exciting times. You know what would be great? And yeah, I know, obviously, they're on the road in Texas. It would be great if the Red Sox players showed up at either game as a thank you for taking the pressure and the attention of their horrible start off with these two teams playing game sevens in the playoffs.
Yeah, specifically Heim Bloom and Trevor Story. They just show up, be like, thank you.
They just show up.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Wearing like sandwich board. Thank you.
Hey, Jim, I don't know where you want to go next here, but I do have to ask you, because I know we're going to get to five questions pretty soon, but you didn't tell me we did the Patriots schedule. What's your road game this year?
Oh, so, you know, in looking at it, I was eyeing this because you might want to parlay this, because you said you probably are going to have to be on the road for that Thanksgiving game where they're against the Vikings. So in looking at it, at that Bucs schedule, they are at Cleveland that weekend. So obviously I'm going to be doing the post game for the Patriots Thanksgiving night, getting home 3 a.m., ruining my holiday. And then that weekend, so Bucs at Cleveland the day before, Michigan at Ohio State, Columbus.
Oh.
Only 2 hours away from Cleveland, do the college game, do the game for between the Bucks and the Browns, home Monday morning. That's what I think I want to do.
That's what you're going to do? Okay, because the Bucks have quite the schedule.
Yeah, I don't like that either. Couple of games opening on the road. They're at Dallas, at the Saints. Then it's home, I think, Green Bay, Kansas
this
City.
This schedule is insanely difficult. Yeah. I mean, they're not really giving Brady a very good farewell tour.
They are not.
If anything, it seems like they're kind of trying to like shaft him and make sure he doesn't do anything.
Does kind of feel that way looking at it, yeah. But, you know, there is some trepidation there, too. It's like, this has to catch up on them eventually, right? I know here I am doubting this guy at this point when he's all, you know, made us look like complete fools.
Well, did you see today? I think this is today. I don't know. was on Instagram in the break, but he did like a, he's like riding a bike somewhere, like one of those bikes that you can
like the electric like
share
bikes?
Things. No, not an electric bike. But you know, like the bike share. Like we had like a blue bike.
He's on one of those?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Those things are germ factories. Why would you ever get on one of those?
It's funny. He posted the thing. He's like, took me 10 minutes to get this out. Like all of us, he had a hard time with like the payment situation.
Oh,
I just saw it on Instagram. Yeah.
Yeah. There's part of me that looks at that. I'm like, wow, that's real deep in the season. Like, does he make it to that point? And like, do I even want to book this? But I do, regardless, no matter what team you're a fan of, if you can, we've talked about this before, Chris, if you can make it work, that you get the double dip, you get a big college game on the Saturday and then you get the NFL game on the Sunday. That's a hell of a weekend.
That is a good weekend. Yeah. I'm just looking at some of these other games that I'm surprised, like you wouldn't want to go to, like, well, I guess the Patriots. Oh, but it has to be a day where you don't have to do pregame.
Right. Yeah.
So you're limited.
It's got to coincide with how the Patriots schedule lands. And as it is, I'm going to have to take off that Pittsburgh game because I'm a best man in a wedding. So.
Oh, interesting. All right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, So maybe think about that Thanksgiving weekend. I think that might be the one to try to make work.
Gotcha.
Mike in Woburn, it says officials. So, well, this is Mike's calling. This is Mike's calling card. Hey, pal.
And a perfect lead in with Brady on a bicycle, right? If you watch that video, by the way, Brady exposes one of those douchey Lance Armstrong wannabes blowing right through a crosswalk too.
He did. He actually did. He said, yes, "Hey, buddy, that's a crosswalk. Brady, that was awesome."
Right. Brady, recognizing that it is a leisure hobby, stops and lets the pedestrian go by, exposing toxic cycling culture. Tom Brady once again showing us why he is the GOAT. And speaking of following the rules, can we just have two game sevens without some giant controversy? That's all I ask going into this weekend. Like, can we make sure that I know they give Giannis some like leeway, but can we make sure he takes less steps than Machu Picchu to the basket every time he drives the lane? It's one thing that he like they let him be Earl Campbell when he goes to the basket, but the video that circulated with him taking literally six steps. And the guys on the call on TV basically giving him a tongue bath for the spin move and not the footwork that looks like something out of Dance Fever. It was ridiculous last night. I couldn't believe it. And then you dovetail that into, I know, Jim, I know you want the Leafs to lose. I want the Leafs to lose. The Leafs losing in the first round is like a tradition that we can all, love and cherish. The fact that it will come at the hands of Kelly Sutherland ruining once again another playoff series drives me crazy. I swear to God, I wanted to get a restraining order if he was assigned to the Bruins in Game 7 in Raleigh today. Because that guy, it's the same thing that he did to the Bruins in 2011. I don't know if you remember this.
Oh, yeah.
The Canadians got a late power play in Game 7 because of a fake high stick to James Wisniewski. Bergeron, went to lift his stick. His stick went by his head. Wisniewski gave him the Montreal flip with the head back. And boom, power play. P.K. Subban scores. They go into overtime. Sutherland almost basically derailed that cup run in the first round. And he did the same thing to Toronto in Game 6. Like, two terrible penalties. This guy's ruined two cups in a row, cup finals in a row. How he's allowed within 100 feet of an arena, I have no idea in the playoffs. None.
Yeah, Mike, and I knew it too as soon as I opened it. Because Toronto kind of got boned.
Okay, I didn't see this.
Yeah, so it was a bad call. It was David Camp on a high stick, and it was, he hit the guy Toronto with, like, Tampa rather. It was he hit him in the shoulder. Like, it was a clean hit, but they call high stick. Tampa benefits from the call, of course, and it was Kelly Sutherland. And I immediately opened Twitter, and there was Mike and Woburn saying, "I hope Kelly Sutherland dies alone." Set a watch to this.
Well, but no, Kelly Sutherland and Jennifer Aniston can find each other.
Oh, they're both heading that way. I actually thought, just quickly, on last night's game, I thought the officials in Game 6 in the Celtics-Bucks series, they've kind of let them play last night, which was nice to see.
Yeah, I didn't think they did a bad job. And this is one thing I'd say. I know Celtics fans are hopped up on the Giannis thing, but, this would be, if I were on social media right now, would be one of those things where I put in parentheses, whispers, Jason Tatum travels every time he does that sidestep three. Yeah. That's a travel. You're lifting your pivot foot. But that's just the way the game is now. People get their signature moves. Tatum's sidestep three is a travel. It's been a travel from the moment he used it. He's never, ever been called. So Tatum does his thing. There was one last night with Marcus Smart that was a clear up and down, which in talking with Scal, he told me that they basically just don't call that anymore. Like up and down, where like Smart basically left his feet all the way. And then at the last second landed on them and passed the ball because it was like an ultimate up fake. So I don't know. I'd say it's on the calls that the opposition gets. But if you look at your stars and some of their stuff, like they get their calls, too, in terms of what their signature moves are.
All right. With that, let's wrap things up with five questions. Got nothing to do with sports.
I got five questions for Chris Kasper of the Globe. I got five questions.
All right, Chris, question number one. The governor of California announced last week that the state has a $97 billion surplus. So if Massachusetts had something like that, what's something that our state needs to buy that they haven't done yet?
Oh, well, I would say that we should buy a monorail, Jim. I think that would be a great idea. Now, it really might be more of a Shelbyville idea, but I think we should buy a monorail.
Honestly,
you know what we should do? I don't want to buy anything. How about we just fix the road?
Thank you.
Okay.
My
How about
answer
that?
To this
Let's
is,
just fix the roads.
That's the
Some
answer.
Of us have cars with rather expensive wheels on them that are very expensive to replace and a little delicate because it's all-wheel drive. I would just like to not... I'd have to go.
Fix the effing roads. That's always the right answer. Question number two. Chris, what's the most embarrassing or guilty item in your refrigerator or pantry right now?
Embarrassing or guilty. I would say from the guilty standpoint, I have a couple. It's not in my refrigerator. It's in the pantry. But I have a couple little cups of mini Oreos. And it's like, you know, I'm just literally opening the little mini cup and basically drinking the Oreos, like just, you know, like it's a drink, like it's bad.
Yeah, and for us, it's old cheese. There's always old cheese in there that I don't want to throw away because I'm like, I might get to this. There's crackers, and I might want this as a late night snack some night. And I should just get rid of it. It's all a matter of time before it starts to grow fur on it.
Oh, that's so gross.
I'm a gross person, Chris.
Oh.
It's going to hit, well, even though you're not here, but you're going to be flying back later this afternoon. Going to be in the 80s, mid-80s today in Boston. All right, Chris, okay. Are you a tank top guy when it gets this hot? T-shirts, or do you go shirtless?
I definitely don't go shirtless. I'm not really a tank top guy. But, you know, short sleeves. I'm a fan of the short sleeve button down. I know, you know, not everybody is into the short sleeve. Not like a work button down, but, you know, I like a good short sleeve button down.
Yeah, you're like our Sipowitz, you know.
Yeah.
Now, I like those.
I guess I am.
I like those too. Tank tops, certainly not. I am not lean enough to pull those off anymore. Chris, do you have security cameras in your house, like a Ring, Blink? And if so, how many? And have you seen anything crazy on them?
No, I don't. I don't have any of that. I don't have any of that stuff. I actually wish I do. I'm on board, and we're talking about potentially trying to get something like that at the front.
All right. And final question. Who are you flying back with today?
I am flying JetBlue, knock on wood.
Yeah, was everything smooth getting out there? Because I know that they've had their issues lately.
Yeah, so I didn't fly them out. You know, I sometimes I'm a fan of the one-way flight. It's, you know, different airlines. I flew United out here, actually, and it was very smooth. And I'm actually in the middle of a United status match, which is big for me. So I have the temporary status. So I need some wins by the Celtics and Bruins today so I can get the status. So I'm doing that, and I'm flying JetBlue back. We'll see. I don't know. I used to be a huge JetBlue fan, but they've kind of fallen off, and I'm not like 100% confident this plane will take off on time.
It's amazing how far they've fallen, Chris. Like, they were like the airline, I feel like,
I know.
Especially going back 15, 20 years ago. And now it's like they've become like the Sears of the air. Like, I'm just like, ugh. Like, outside of being able to fly Mint, like, I don't know what the hell has happened there. They're going to clean up their act.
I mean, the reality is they were at such a high point, and then basically they're just the same as the other airlines. That's the thing. You know, it felt special and different, and the customer service was incredible. And now it's like, it's just like dealing with any other airline except for there's TVs, and sometimes they work.
Oh, I don't know. I'll tell you, you want to feel special again. Delta. Delta's the way to go.
I am a big, I am a Silver Medallion member. They've stepped up their game. That Delta One, you enjoyed it, didn't you?
So good. All right, well, safe travels, my friend. Thanks for being able to pull this off today via Zoom.
Yep.
Thanks to Jeff Williams for pinch hitting and filling in for B-Rob, who was trying to fly back from Milwaukee today, but got delayed. So hopefully you don't deal with that. Thanks, Jeff. Coming up next, it's Tim McCone and Ted Johnson. You want to talk more about the Celtics win last night and getting ready for big Game 7 for the Bruins and Hurricanes. Get on with them at 617-779-0985. Otherwise, talk to you Monday with Flagler and Mez. Bye.
This is Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.